Hello, this is Daryl War for the February commemorative 10th anniversary of sharing the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows online. The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows is an interruption series, also a relief series, for the 1960s soap opera Dark Shadows with a whole lot of other characters from other shows and movies in an attempt to solve a lot of the problems by interrupting at a certain point and various other points along the way. It is not for anything Dark Shadows fans. It is for major geeks of it who want resolution. And when I say major geeks, they know who loves who. And if you enjoy classic Star Trek and Next Generation Star Trek and maybe a little of Deep Space Nine and Voyager and maybe a little more, those are the four series I mainly know, you might like this. I have found, you know, it's funny, I have found that when I encountered and spoke to, either by voice call or telephone or face-to-face, the people who wanted the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, we didn't even have to ask each other about Star Trek characters. It would just come up naturally. It was like we were on the same page, didn't even question it, didn't even think about it until after the fact. So, yeah, if you know Kirk and Spock and McCoy and Uhura and Scotty and Chekhov and Sulu and Picard and Data and Riker and Troy and Worf, obviously, and Geordi and Crusher and Crusher and, oh gosh, who else? Did I mention Data? I don't know. If you know all those people. And if you're a fan of old Doctor Who, because we are planning to include that, and hopefully this show will delve into that a little bit, this might be for you. It is not for everyone. Like I said in my episode one intro, I don't think a little podcast that will only interest a few people is going to be that big of a deal. Little did I know. So yeah, it's not for everyone. Dark Shadows is for major geeks of a lot of shows and people who want resolution. And I say major geeks, you know who loves who. It's not a big deal. In fact, I'd love to give away the pairings, just to get it out of the way. I think I did that on AO3 just because I was, like, so frustrated with all the garbage that was going on over the years. It just said, well, apparently that was what the problem was the whole time. So, yeah, Barnabas and the Reincarnation of Josette, Elizabeth and Mystery Man, because they're still working him out. Oh, Sheen made a suggestion for Roger. Still working on that. Dr. Hoffman and Professor Stokes, because Professor Stokes was the only person on the television program that we saw as having any interest romantically in Dr. Hoffman. Carolyn Stoddard and Toni Petersson, which is even more wonderful now because initially I thought Cassandra just pulled them apart and maybe other things being in the way also pulled them further apart. But then I rewatched quite a few episodes of Dark Shadows again and they mended. Carolyn and Toni mended and they were going to see each other again. And then it's not even that Toni Petersson got written out. It's just he didn't show up anymore. He just kind of disappeared. So I was like, well, a successful relationship does not a soap opera make, which was why Luke and Laura in General Hospital was such a huge deal back then. He just wasn't there anymore. So I feel like even though it's not soap opera canon, it's more canon to Carolyn and Toni's relationship. Because it mended. It actually did mend. He just didn't show up anymore. Like a lot of characters just don't show up anymore. Oh, no, this is a success. We can't have that. And we also have to keep on getting Carolyn new love interests all the time just to keep the thing going. So, yeah. Carolyn and Toni. Now, moving on. Quentin Collins and Angelique Bouchard. And boy, that was a problem for years. And still is a problem sometimes. But I was hopeful. And then I discovered, yeah, they were interested. To the point that in 1897, Angelique was arguing with Barnabas Collins, of all people, to help her to win Quentin Collins' affections. And if that doesn't convince you, I don't know what does. Yeah. Initially, it was a farce, and I was going to have her be with Sir Simon Milligan from the Kids in the Hall, Pit of Ultimate Darkness skits. But that was when it was a farce, and I got much more involved. It was a hobby to begin with, but I got much more involved in 2013. And that's why this is the 10th anniversary for February 14th, 2022, because I originally shared it on fanfiction.net in text February 14th, middle of the night. I was hoping for a Friday the 13th thing, but it ended up being, I forgot, I was so late, and I was like, oh, okay, I just, it's close enough. But yeah, February 14th, 2012. And I tripped my husband out the other night with this, because he was like, well, I knew it was the 10th anniversary for the film this year. How, what? And I was like, yeah, the scripts were shared in 2012, before the movie came out. And he was like, oh, yeah. Because it got so much more important in 2013. Because in 2012, and a little prior to that, it was totally a hobby. It was just textual, a hobby. But I'd been doing so many LibriVox books. And one of the things that my cousin and my husband and I and his sister, you know, my other cousin, had been doing was being very interested in doing some fun recordings. Mostly my cousin did these recordings of Star Trek The Next Perpetration, which has its own website on, I think, Heptoon somewhere. It's a little hard to find. That was total farce, but it was what helped inspired me to make The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, because Star Trek The Next Perpetration was in radio drama format and added a ton of other fandoms over various episodes. And that was written by multiple people. And it showed me, if you do radio drama, you can stuff in a lot. They had commercials, a lot of which were Borg commercials, but yeah, I realized with that, you can stuff in a lot. So that was a big inspiration, my cousin telling me about Star Trek The Next Perpetration, which got very farcical and very vulgar at times. Yeah, that's one of the things, like with one of my favorite dub series, Sailor Moon Abridged, is that you kind of know that people are running out of steam when the jokes are just getting more and more vulgar over time. So we have tried not to do that here. I have tried not to do that here. Try to keep it in the T rating. The podcasts don't, though. I've gotten very angry over the years. But anyway, let's go with more of the history into this. It was in text on a website. I think it was like a Google website, because I had done Sailor Moon fan fiction previously, and that was not through fanfiction.net. Fanfiction.net might have existed when I was doing the Sailor Moon stuff, but what I knew was just make an HTML freebie website. I did that with a lot of stuff, and me and other people in Sailor Moon chat rooms would do that. Just make these HTML websites through GeoCities and all that. Stuff like GeoCities, if it wasn't GeoCities. So I figured that was how I had to do it, and then I realized, fanfiction.net is a done deal, so let's just pull it over there. So this is commemorating the 10th anniversary in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, which came before the film, technically. Not the podcast, not the audio version, but sharing the textual bits online. So that was a webpage, January 2012, later at fanfiction.net, February 14th, 2012, and then the podcast for episode 1 was created and uploaded November of 2013 on Internet Archive. And later on, it went to Podomatic, and then all over the place, heaven knows, after that. And episode 1 is, you know, it starts after Maggie Evans kidnapping, but she has come home already, and Willie Loomis has gone to Wincliffe. And the reason for that was because Willie was too much for me, and I needed to get Colin Wood into a safer, happier vibe before bringing him back. I was like, just wait. You know, you want to bring him back, just wait. You gotta, you know, figure that out. So, the first one includes Slimer from the Ghostbusters movie, as well as the Ghostbusters cartoon, and the parapsychologist from Poltergeist, because I wasn't worried about time displacement. I wasn't too worried about, you know, characters being included from all over the place. And it still kind of works, because you never know with Colin Wood. But then there is Wadsworth from Clue the movie, which was released in the 1980s, but took place in New England, 1954. And then the hosts are from The Kids in the Hall, Sir Simon Milligan, who was played by Kevin MacDonald, and manservant Hecubus, who was played by David Foley. And that's where the title comes from, was a mixture of The Pit of Ultimate Darkness with Milligan and Hecubus, mixed with Dark Shadows. So that's how it became The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. I was slapping myself in the forehead for a long time, not being able to come up with that. So Milligan and Hecubus are mainstay. They get you from point to point, and they're updated characters, so they can say anything that is like an updated thing. They don't have to remain in the 1960s. And Wadsworth also remains, so it's like a gate crash episode. And then episode two.
Oh, wow.
It was a separate web page. The episode two was also on a separate web page a few days before the fanfiction.net. So it was 11 February 2012, then 14 February 2012. And then the podcast version was created and uploaded November 2013. Actually, it took me longer than one day. So that one doesn't really include any one extra, except George from the Time Machine is a little cameo because Victoria Winters comes back from the past and says, "Yeah, I saw somebody." And that was just too hard to resist. That, you know, she's time traveling, so maybe on the way back from the 1790s, she sees George from the Time Machine and she says, "Look more surprised to see me than I was to see him." So yeah, there's a postum joke in there too. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I gave, you know, that's the thing, you know, people thinking that I'm anti-Julia Hoffman just because I'm not pairing her up with the non-canon romance. It's not the canon romance. It's the non-canon romance. My husband coined that. I thought it was really cool. But I gave her some of my best jokes that I've been hanging on to since I was little. Like, single digits. You know, she says in episode two, Dr. Julia Hoffman, when Barnabas refers to himself as possibly a night owl, she says, except for the fact that owls are up at night anyway, so saying night owl is completely redundant? I've given her some of the best jokes I had in me that I've been saving forever. So, yeah. I mean, I felt she was pretty sarcastic on the show already, but let's just let her be even more sarcastic. Why not? Give her some good stuff. So, yeah. So, episode two is sort of just kind of a, you know, let's keep going. Also sort of introduces Peter Bradford a little bit. Episode 3, The Strega of Brooklyn. Oh, wow. You know, I guess because the film came out and I was busy with work and all kinds of other stuff. And at that time, it was just a hobby. So that also was 2012, but it was the 2nd of November. So it was quite a while after sharing episode 2 in text. Yeah, the DS film in May kept us busy for a while. And the podcast was uploaded November 2013. And The Strega of Brooklyn actually added quite a few things, like Twin Peaks, figuring that, you know, Victoria and Peter are on a road trip, and maybe there's some way that they could get to a 1990s Twin Peaks, but still make a telephone call to a 1960s Collinwood. Also, what gets included, which was an inspiration from the kids in the hall, was Sophia from the Golden Girls. And so we're back at the cheesecake table, and work it out where Sophia's telling a story like they do at the cheesecake table of this is what happened once upon a time. Then we morph into the actual situation. And it's a whack-a-mole episode where Mrs. Johnson is just telling a younger Sophia Petrillo, this is how everything worked out. And it just cuts through a lot of stuff. It's the essential Adam episode too, because what happens to Adam is not only does he have Professor Stokes helping him, but you also find out that Wadsworth was helping him, so he's super slick, and he's saying, like, $10-$15 words. And I actually wrote to Robert Rodan about this episode for the sake that I got news on a news group, I think it was a Yahoo news group, that he wasn't doing too good. And I was like, well, I don't know what else to tell him about. So I thought, I don't know, maybe this will cheer you up. I don't know. This is where Adam went, you know, this is the good things that happened to Adam in my relief series and trying to just solve most of the character's problems. So, I don't know, never thought in my life I'd write to him, but there we have it. And that is starting to morph more in let's focus on the 60s. And because the Golden Girls are having flashbacks and have lived a long time, it really worked out. And then we go on to episode 4. Which I guess I had really been doing a lot of studying of The Ghost of Mrs. Muir from the 1960s, that television show. Because episode 4 was actually on the fanfiction site in December of 2012. 16 December 2012. So I must have really been working it. That still surprises me. I always think episode 4 came in 2013. That includes The Ghost of Mrs. Muir television program characters, Tony Peterson and Carolyn Stoddard go on a date to Schooner Bay and meet with Carolyn Muir at Laurie's Lobster House and get involved with her that way. And Martha is also in there. There's also a little bit of Rocky Horror Picture Show, just sort of playing with the idea that Wadsworth is also Dr. Frankenfurter, because at the time I did not realize that Rocky Horror Picture Show wasn't in any time. It was probably in the 70s. I just didn't consider it. It just was this thing, just being totally wacky. So that includes The Ghost of Mrs. Muir. So from episode 1 to 4, we have Wadsworth, one episode with Sophia from the Golden Girls, some cameos, but now we are including, for the long haul, Captain Greg, Mrs. Muir, and people from The Ghost of Mrs. Muir. Now, episode 5, Saving Pop, that plays a little bit with The Prisoner. Let's see, it would have been nice if it was number 6, I know, but it is, you know, it's going along. So we maintain The Ghost of Mrs. Muir, we maintain Wadsworth. It was textually shared on the 3rd of April, 2013, and the podcast was uploaded November, 2013. So we still have The Ghost of Mrs. Muir and Wadsworth. So yeah, it's just slowly adding people along the way to help solve problems and resolve the issues. And episode 6, I didn't save enough of the information, so it was somewhere between April and July of 2013 that the text was shared. The podcast was uploaded November 24th, 2013. So this one is where we get the Bates Motel, just a little bit of the Bates Motel. Actually, that was the end of episode 5, too, so I forgot about that, but at the very end, we introduce the Addams Family, and it's just in a letter along the way. So, very slowly building stuff up. Episode 7, the text was shared July 26, 2013, and the podcast version was uploaded on the 2nd of December, 2013. That includes a scene with the Addams Family, so we've added yet another set along the way here. And so we go from the Blair Warlock projected episode 7 to episode 8, a long-awaited trip to the Passion Pit. We move on to episode 8. A little more Addams Family. Everybody is still more or less there. And that text was shared the 10th of August, 2013. And the podcast completed and uploaded February 18th, 2014. Because things were starting to just kind of crumble as I got more involved with commercial social media. And you'll notice the dates get more spread out as we go. Then episode 9, The Wisdom of Mayhem, this is where we include the Munsters. So the list is just getting longer. All right. Oh, and so episode 9, The Wisdom of Mayhem, includes an original character that I made up for the sake that I didn't think that we were going to obtain the first year to be able to get the source material for it. The text of that was shared August 27th, 2013. And the podcast was uploaded March 21st, 2014. Episode 10, The Kids Are All Right, was shared in text on the 18th of September, 2013. And the audio was uploaded May 5th, 2014. The major inclusion here is Sarah's Ghost Returns. That was a huge deal. Episode 11, in whole, was shared October 4th, 2013. The audio was uploaded June 17th, 2014. And it was cut into 2 points, and I added what I knew. I didn't go to the Big Finish audio for this. I just maintained who could Caleb Collins' ghost have been from material solely based on the TV show of Dark Shadows. So he comes in. And part 2 of episode 11, Caleb Collins Fights Back. There's a lot of fun in that one. Episode 12 doesn't include any new fandoms other than an original character I made up, because that's a dark therapy and it has to do with regression therapy. The text was shared October 10th, 2013, and the audio was shared August 7th, 2014. The main thing with that was creating an original character in between Kitty Soames and Maggie Evans as the reincarnation of Josette Dupré, because I was irritated that I had to do that much more studying, because, like I say, this is for major geeks who want to get a lot of accuracy, even if it's difficult with a television show to do that. especially in the 60s, because they really didn't consider people were going to watch this again. It was going to be on once and gone. That's a lot more difficult to figure out continuity issues and how to make them work. And Ghost of Mrs. Muir fandom does work hard to do that with their fan work, so I super appreciate that. No one knew, as far as I know, in episode 13, a balancing of the humors. It was shared in text the 15th of October, 2013, and then the audio completed and uploaded December 20th, 2014. Had a lot of druthers with that. And then 14 is really just Dark Shadows and Wadsworth. And the text was shared the 20th of October, 2013. So I was going pretty fast. There was like a lot of episodes between September and October, real fast, as far as the text went, because I was just on a roll. But then it took forever. Episode 14 was uploaded on the 31st of October, 2015, which is, wow, that's kind of sad. I didn't remember that. I was hoping it was sooner. It was 4 months in production for audio in 2014, so that's probably part of the reason. But Willie comes back in episode 13 and 14, but he comes home in episode 14, and a lot of important stuff gets dealt with. Episode 15, there's nobody new included. It was shared originally the 13th of December 2013, and then the audio was shared June 1st, 2016. Again, we're seeing the shows, the text was very close together for the most part, and then but the audio is just getting further and further apart. And that'll continue for both. Let's see. Episode 16, A Death in the Family. The 15th one was A Blundering Succubus, but the 16th one was A Death in the Family. That took 2 years, because I was just involved in so much of the commercial social media shit. So I finally got it up, the text, 28 October 2016. Also, same date for the audio. It's kind of simultaneous. Yeah, the dates are getting further apart because I was just so involved in the garbage. Oh, and that one, 16, includes Hawkeye from MASH, who gets up the nose of Dr. Hoffman. Felt it was very appropriate that maybe as an intern she had to deal with this guy coming back from Korea. And Beetlejuice at the end, the bio-exorcist. With the Hawkeye, it's more of a cameo. With Beetlejuice, he gets like a couple episodes, just a couple scenes per 2 episodes. Episode 17 also took about 4 years to build since 2015, and the text was shared the 29th of June, 2018, and the audio was shared the same date, 29 June, 2018. Taking a long time. So, everybody's still on board. Then, episode 18, also built over 2 years. Oh yeah, since October 5th, 2016, shared between the 12th and 11th, both versions, December 2018. With that one, we're saving Mr. Wells from Dark Shadows and including Bewitched, which Endora was actually included in episode 11, too. I forgot to mention that. So we're adding more and more and more, but whoever can help, like, it's more of a thing where in what way could they add to what's missing or the resolution, more for the resolution. And same thing goes with Happy Hour in Hell, which was shared in August 28th, 2019. Continuation with Bewitched as well, so we've got as much as possible. And then episode 20, Bark at the Moon, was the end of July 2020. And that's when we start adding the Jennings people. I mean, Tom was in there already, but we're adding Amy at some point, and then Chris, too. And that's why it's called Bark at the Moon. We also have some Adams family, some Captain Greg. And then episode 21, Up the Damn Staircase. The audio was shared first, 28 December 2020. And then the text, 29 December 2020. So it has become, at this point, if it's not on the stage, it's not on the page. It's opposite, too. If it's not on the page, it's not on the stage. If it's not on the stage, it's not on the page. Try to get the audio as correct as possible before sharing the page. And then 22, which is the last one I currently have out there. Oh, I started building that in 2020 and released it the 30th October 2021. So, yeah, no one knew. It's the same crop of people, but there's plenty of them. And that is the progression of everything that has occurred. Although, episode 22 is very much too bold to go where even Bella Heathcote's Josette has never gone before. We're going further with Maggie Evans's The Reincarnation.
I also wanted to get into the reason I came up with constructive praise, because at the turn of the century, 20th to 21st, I kept seeing this trend of constructive criticism, and it got worse and worse and worse over the years, where it wasn't even contextual whatsoever. People talk about context collapse. Now, this phrase definitely includes not understanding the context of what you are reading or viewing or listening to. That was what I was seeing in at least 2002, if not earlier. So, since I've been sharing my own work for the sake of narrative discussion, which I did not have a term for, I came up with constructive praise, which would likely still be very good for children, and myself, as well, anybody. But we did narrative discussion like crazy in the 20th century, because we were really into being a geek about a lot of fictional works. We just didn't really have a term for it. So it became, quote-unquote, constructive criticism, which has obviously, as a lot of you have seen, developed into bashing and hate speak for rewards. And being on a conveyor belt, because a lot of commercial social media puts you on a conveyor belt, an endless conveyor belt, and you're just nitpicking the crap out of everything you see. You're just taught to do that. You're being worked like a horse, and not only are you not being paid for it, you are paying for it with your attention and your money. So I came up with constructive praise to try and sideswipe the quote-unquote constructive criticism that was just becoming trash talk. Just trash talk. And everybody gets rewards for trash talk. And it's like, you've taken away the escapism entirely. Like I said at the beginning, if you're really into Star Trek and you're a major geek, this is likely for you. This stuff is likely for you. But what I didn't have a term for, and what I meant to express, was narrative discussion. That's what the work's being shared for. And a lot of us knew that in fan fiction and other fiction. However, what happens these days? We're sharing it, people nitpick it to death, then we edit it to death, we share it again, and then what happens? Nothing. What's the point? So that's another reason I came up with the Q&A on thepitofultimatedarkshadows.wordpress.com. And people look at it like it's homework, some people. No. You had that homework once upon a time so you could naturally do the narrative discussion and the digestion of the narrative itself. That's what we had. It was homework. And what I've put together is as fun as I could make it. It's as fun as I could make it. Just trying to focus on the positive, as a lot of you have suggested and advised me of. So I'm giving it back. And that's what the question and answers are for on thepitofultimatedarkshadows.wordpress.com. If you can come up with narrative discussion on your own, great. I love it. One pen pal is able to do that. One pen pal. And Oshin used to be able to. Lisa could do it too, and I think Melissa. So we'll see if they're able to go back to that. That would be great. But anyway, yeah, that is what those questions are for. One of the reasons I came up with them was because Tingler was, once upon a time, years ago, he was having such a hard time, and he just started, like, telling me all of this stuff just in random order of what he liked about an episode, and I was like, okay, I'm going to give you some questions and put the questions in order scene by scene. So that's what they're there for, to get you back in touch with communicating the narrative discussion in sequential order, because it's been difficult for a lot of people to understand how to do that again. And now we're going to have a little intermission from the past of the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows into the potential future in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. Because my husband and I recently finished season 16 of Doctor Who, which is where we're trying to reach against the Leviathans in Dark Shadows, and working it out. So this is our observations the other night. Enjoy.
Alright, so we just finished the last episode of season 16 of Doctor Who,
which was the Armageddon Factor. And I get to enjoy the commentary later, which looks good. So the first one was the Ribos Operation, or Ribos. Sometimes it's pronounced Ribos and sometimes it's pronounced Ribos Operation. Oh, wow. Douglas Adams took over as script editor from Anthony Reed for the Armageddon Factor.
Oh, did he?
Apparently. Must have been lovely, him editing somebody else's stuff. The Doctor is recruited by the White Guardian to seek the 6 segments of The Key to Time. The quest for this first segment takes them to Ribos or Ribos, a medieval planet that galactic confidence trickster Garon is trying to sell to the Graf Vidna K. Yeah, oh man. So that one, I'm trying to remember. Oh, well, what I wanted to say was, yes, the White Guardian, who is in a wicker chair, the better to have gotten maybe in the 80s, from World Market Cost Plus. That's where I remember those things being.
Oh, actual wicker chairs. Okay.
I actually saw those in people's houses. I don't know if you ever saw one.
I don't know if I saw a full-size one. I think we had, like, a kid chair. My sister or I had, like, a wicker kid's chair?
Yeah.
Or something. It was kind of, I don't know.
But, well, like, with the big back, so you'd look all regal and whatever. I'm trying to remember what happened in the Ribos operation.
Well, it was that funky planet with, like, the treasure room and the con men and that weird prince guy who was trying to regain his throne. It was, like, that blue-looking gemstone was the key to time.
Ah.
And the monster thing in the room, in, like, the side room, the guardian monster thing. Is this ringing a bell?
A little bit. I'm just worried that I'm going to get mixed up with the other one that was sort of medieval-looking. I'm trying to remember if the Ribos operation was the one where the lower class were the people who fixed the androids.
No. That was a recent one.
I know, but that's why I was having trouble, because it's been a long time since we watched
it. And I'm trying to remember, was that the one where they went into, like, the dungeon? Like, the lower territory? Or was that a later one? I'm not sure. And it was all snowy outside.
Okay, yeah, the snow. All right, thank you.
Okay, so
that's
what
all
was
I
the,
needed.
What was the next one?
Okay, so I gotta go back, because I was looking at the Ribos operation just straight. And then Pirate Planet. Now that one was...
Oh, that was the second one was Pirate Planet?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the first one had 4 parts, the second one had 4 parts, and that was Douglas Adams.
As the script writer.
Yes.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, and it was different for the sake that it wasn't, you know, some villain out to encompass the universe, such as the Daleks or the Cybermen or what have you. It was just they were pulling a bunch of... kind of mineral resources and things like that from each planet, and that would destroy it, and then they would just be like, oh, we're continuing onward with...
Yeah, but, I mean, they were killing a shit ton of people, right?
Ugh, yeah.
They would, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that one was also cool, because, and I feel like Douglas Adams hit it dead on with making that weird, on the captain's shoulder, the parrot that was the robot, and then eventually there was, like, a showdown with K-9 destroying the parrot. Or whatever, the bird, or whatever it was.
Yeah, the bird and K-9 having some battle, and K-9 eventually defeating the bird and, like, bringing it back like a retriever dog, and, like...
Yeah, that's right. I felt like the way that that was written, he did very well with K-9 having sort of a mini-enemy that was somewhat comparable to himself. and I think K-9 had a lot of lines in Fire Planet. Then Stones of Blood, which is, gosh, that was one of the reasons I wanted to get the whole set.
Oh, Stones of Blood. Yeah. Okay.
Again, a villain who isn't out to get it all, just a little corner of the universe that she maintains for about 2,000 years and then gets in trouble, and that's the end. Not asking as much as the bigger villains.
Or even the pirate planet.
Even
villains.
The pirate, yeah, not even asking
she
that
wasn't
much.
As much. They were pretty nasty.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And then weird stuff in Stones of Blood with, though, those things that would, like, float around. It was like, whoa, yeah.
Oh, the judge, jury, and executioner machines.
Yeah, that was something. It's like, it's so funny because when we started Fourth Doctor, it was up to date, but for us it was like, what the heck, you know, with the green bubble wrap. the bubble wrap spray painted green. By today's standards, really low tech. So with Stones of Blood and those other creatures who were just sort of like these floating lights, that was intense. the next story after Stone's Blood was The Androids of Tara.
Okay, that was the one where the lower class would, like, repair...
Oh, the androids.
The androids.
Yes. The quest for the fourth segment takes them to the planet Tara. The Fourth Doctor and Romana find themselves embroiled in the political games of the planet Tara, where doubles android or otherwise complicate the coronation of Prince Renard. Yeah, that got pretty heavy. That got actually pretty close to a romance going on. And the Power of Kroll. The quest for the fifth segment takes them to the third moon of Delta Magna, caught in the middle of a dispute between the crew of a methane refinery and the natives, known as Swampies. That's right. Oh, that got... Wow.
And that was John Leeson as a...
That's right. As a human. Humanoid.
He was physically in it.
Yeah.
He was opposed to just voicing K-9, yeah.
And, yeah, I haven't finished the commentary for that one, too. When, goodness me, it's me, or golly me, it's me. Like, he finally sees himself and is like, okay, we were pretty sure that was the actual John Leeson in the flesh, as opposed to the voice of K-9. And then we just watched the Armageddon, or finished watching the Armageddon Factor. The quest for the sixth and final segment takes them to Atrios, a world at war with its planetary neighbor, Zeos, but the Black Guardian is closing in. And that's when it just got really bizarre. And of course, as we're watching, gosh, and the Drax character, that was wild. I had to go look him up while we were watching.
I was surprised. I did not remember him. I didn't really remember that story much. You know, most of the season, I didn't remember the details that well.
Yeah.
It was more bits and pieces that I would remember.
Yeah. I have to look up Dr. Claw, but, like, I was just like, and he just gets so cartoon villain.
Or not the Black Guardian, the Shadow.
The Shadow, yeah.
The servant of the Black Guardian.
Okay, yeah, that's who it was. But yeah, he felt very much like Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget with the voice.
Okay, so that's what you meant. You mentioned Dr. Claw, and I'm like, who's that? But I think we're in the middle of watching, so.
Yeah, and I have to go and look up Dr. Claw some more just to make sure that the voice is as accurate as I think it is. Just because it's like, oh my gosh, who's this dude? You know, it's like you never really see him other than in parts, like in his den looking onward at whatever he's rubbing his hands over or getting all villainous about. But that's what that guy reminded me of. It's like, it is mine. And it's like, you don't have it yet.
Oh yeah, he kept announcing, it is mine, it is mine. And then it was funny, too, right? Because then Lala Ward was a different character.
Princess Astra, yeah.
Princess Astra, before becoming a regular
on
the show the next season.
Made the comment of, I guess Romana took to Princess Astra's looks, because eventually we do get who played Princess Astra as Romana, too.
The next episode.
Yeah, and there was something on a website, I think it was either Fandom or Wiki or whatever, about Romana, and it was going on all these ideas of why Romana switched or regenerated. It was just a big old list of, like, this could be it, or this could be that, that could be that, whatever.
I was trying to come up with a reasonable explanation as opposed to, I think, the one stated in the show. I thought it was time for a new look.
Yeah, yeah, and that was great with one of the interviews with Mary Tam. Yeah, I think it was with some of the extras on the DVDs for this season, where she's all, I don't know, they didn't ask me. It would have been great to have another Time Lord regenerate.
Oh, to do the regeneration.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of trippy stuff. And so, as we wrapped up the Armageddon Factor, because I had said in another podcast that, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could somehow interrupt while they still have the... Key to Time, and that it could be possibly Barnabas Collins in the Key to Time. But so much was happening very quickly within the showdown. I mean, like, there was a segment of time that was in a loop. Then Drax, who was also a Time Lord, who happened to pick up a Cockney accent in Brixton in order to deal with being incarcerated for 10 years or something like that. He was kind of cool. He, like, made mistakes and apparently was big in cybernetics and able to do certain things and just was a goofy guy. But always neat to have another Time Lord along. And so that episode we just watched of the Armageddon Factor, that's like three Time Lords. Three people from Gallifrey.
Without being on Gallifrey.
That's kind of just marvelous right there. But, I mean, plus it was so funny. Whatever little, like some sort of mini door or something in the rock that had, like, opened up. And Tom Baker's, like, trying not to be seen and then realizing he's going to be seen. And then they're just so almost nose to nose, like, crouching down. And Drax is reaching for the Doctor, and I'm just like, what the heck is this guy's drip? Because he was talking to him like he was a pet.
Plus, it was so goofy, it's like he recognized him, even though he's a totally different incarnation.
Yeah, somehow they just know, I guess, you know, just like Victoria knew that Anthony George was Burke when he wasn't Mitchell Ryan anymore.
Oh, well, yeah, but... But, I mean, in the story, he actually looks totally different.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to the Burke switch.
Yeah, the great Burke swap. I do not want to drop any inspirations out there that Burke Devlin is a Time Lord. Absolutely not. People have dropped inspirations about Barnabas being a Time Lord, and it's like, well, in joviality, okay.
Burke.
So that is for the 16th season, and then we'll carry on to the 17th season, and I'll find out if Lala Ward is up to snuff for me, just because I have fallen in love so much with Romana. As of now, Romana is my favorite Doctor Who companion. But I've mainly seen Mary Tam as an adult, whereas Lala Ward I recognize from my childhood, but I'm not sure. I'm going to find out, I guess, as an adult, if she...
Yeah, hopefully. I'm hoping we can get him, but if
yeah.
not, we'll see if the library can...
Yeah, we'll see what... Because otherwise, I could... If I could find the proper format, then I would be fine getting it if we can't get it through one means or another for rent.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm happy to have this, because there's a lot of great commentary. I mean, I'm looking forward to the commentary on the Armageddon Factor, because...
Yeah. I know you wanted that.
Yeah.
You checked it out of the library, and you were like, oh, this is good, I want it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's got Tom Baker, John Leeson, and Mary Tam, so I'm all about that. We'll see if there's more later. Maybe the writer will show up.
Mm.
And so for season 17, got Destiny of the Daleks. I was kind of irked. It's like, I don't want to see Davros again. It's so painful. City of Death. The Creature from the Pit. It's like another lady villain for that one. Nightmare of Eden. The Horns of Nimon or Nimon. N-I-M-O-N. Oh, actually, that's where they put Shada, even though that was an unaired. But we've got...
We did look it up, and it was planned to be the last episode of the season.
Which is great, because now we have this other, at the end of that, or we could watch it earlier, I don't care, because we got these new goodies. But the more updated Shada, even though before it was an updated version of Shada that we saw.
Yeah, I think we read there's even already a newer, more updated version than the one, the updated version we have. The previous update has already been updated.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, that's also David Brierley is the voice of K-9. It looks like that was the thing.
So I think he was that season.
Yeah, that season it was David Brierley. And then I do believe for season 18, it's John Leeson again. For however long K-9 keeps going.
You know, it's weird. I recognize all the episode titles.
Yes.
From season 17, but I don't remember what any of them actually are. I assume as I see them, I'll recognize at least some of them.
Mm-hmm. But where you said I'll be back, so we were in the middle of some topic.
Oh, you remember? I had said, it's interesting, I recognize the episode titles of season 17 from when I watched them 30 plus years ago, but I don't remember what...
Each entails.
Any of them specifically, are. I don't remember.
It's also, it feels very therapeutic watching Doctor Who just in general, because... It just feels like you're seeing certain metaphors in life currently. What's been going on and, you know, weird people being in charge and hypnotizing other people. And so anyway, that is our wrap-up for the continuing watching old Doctor Who, Fourth Doctor, with Daryl and Daryl's husband.
And so now off we go to my ramblings, which, oddly, I know a lot of you enjoy, and perhaps sleep to. All right, to attempt to wrap this up. Commemorative episode in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, celebrating the 10-year anniversary of having shared 4 scripts online, or at least before the film, 2 scripts online, but there we have it. But I had a lot more blah blahs in me. I don't know if anybody's interested. Like I say, you don't tell me, can't get in touch, helpless to get in touch. But thankfully, one pen friend who I am so grateful for over the years has asked me about Josette Dupres. And it's been great because I've been able to tell friends I did not really care about her. And not really much about Barnabas. It was just I wanted a relief series, and they were straightforward. They were obviously the pair that loved each other. You see that in multiple versions of Dark Shadows. So my job was to get them accurate. That was about it. Didn't really have anything, you know, any should love issues. But anyway, I had put up that thing about Josette Dupre, she's complicated. If you really think about it, if you are a Star Trek fan, especially in the 20th century, with all the weird stuff that went on with Spock's journey between Star Trek 2, 3, and 4, everything that went into that, you think about that. That should make Josette Dupre a whole lot easier to understand, because what do we have? Like I say, people who might enjoy The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows could also be Star Trek fans. It is very possible. So, with Spock in those movies, for that to work, one needed Mind Meld, Spock's Katra traveling in the mind of Dr. McCoy, the Genesis planet to regenerate Spock somehow, the right people and the right timing, which includes Sarek visiting Kirk on Earth and everything else going on with the other members of the Enterprise and stealing the Enterprise and getting to the Genesis planet and Savick and David being there, having discovered the regenerated Spock already, Spock's Katra traveling in the mind of Dr. McCoy, the right people, the right timing, a trip to Vulcan and to Pow to make it all work. So if you can understand that, Josette Dupre should be pretty easy. And let's go through. Melissa and I have been trying to write up. I mean, I started it already with the chronology of Josette Dupre when you go through the original Dark Shadows, which works in a way that is obviously not lined up for how you're viewing it sequentially. But if you understand prequels and sequels and how to line them up in your mind, then it totally works. So with Melissa's help, I've devised this so far. The idea is the Idiot's Guide to Josette Dupre for Dummies. Because if some of you remember, there were those two book series. One was The Idiot's Guide for Fill in the Blank, or The Guide to Fill in the Blank for Dummies. So I just sort of put them both together in my mind. Some of us in Dark Shadows fandom get it. I say she's complicated, but then again, it is more straightforward to me from previous practices. The chronology I understand about Josette Dupre is as follows. 1790s. Josette fancies Barnabas Collins via meeting him on a business venture to Martinique, in which André Dupre's business is involved. Josette wonders why Barnabas lost interest in her, and vice versa. So she begins writing to him from her home in Martinique, and eventually, through this means, the romance develops. Josette arrives in Collinsport in 1795 to wed Barnabas Collins, and various horrors cascade, and thanks to her jealous handmaiden, Angelique, and other various soap opera problems, Josette gets bewitched to go after Jeremiah and elope with him, as he is also bewitched, and they're both disgusted and confused at the result. Josette becomes a widow via Jeremiah dying in a duel with Barnabas. Later on, Josette is not bewitched and eventually realigns her romance with Barnabas, who has become a vampire thanks to the rubber bat on a stick that Angelique sent to bite him, and eventually weds Barnabas in a secret, unofficial manner. This is Josette and Barnabas. Along with vampire bites as things move along. Josette is not particularly worried about anything beyond being with her beloved until receiving hypnotic delusions from Angelique that Josette will become some haggard-looking, wrinkly vampire, even though Barnabas isn't, but we're talking hypnotism here. Through this fear-laden spell, Josette returns to Widow's Hill. Barnabas comes to allay Josette's fears, but the cackling, superimposed head of Angelique keeps stressing Josette out, so by the time Barnabas reaches Josette, she runs out of real estate and falls backwards from the cliff. At some point after Josette's death, Barnabas attempts to reanimate her. Neither Barnabas nor Josette are pleased at this result, and back Josette goes to her grave, no surprise. Next, in Josette's chronology, 1897, Kitty Soames, also known as Lady Hampshire, has traveled to Collinsport in the hopes of wedding one Edward Collins after she becomes a widow and is looking for a cozy lifestyle such as she has been used to from previously marrying wealth, as many a Victorian lady did. Kitty sees a portrait of Barnabas Collins and meets with a supposed relation of him of the same name, who is, of course, the same person in truth. Eventually, Kitty becomes mesmerized and begins experiencing flashbacks to her previous life as Josette Dupre, going to Jeremiah Collins' grave and expressing the two had no love shared because it was a spell by Angelique they were both under. Edward goes to investigate this weird visit, and Kitty calls Edward by the name of Joshua, which confused him, of course. Kitty realizes she needs to leave Collinwood or she'll end up with Barnabas and doesn't want to hurt Edward. Kitty leaves her engagement ring behind and intends to leave Collinsport, but is drawn to the old house, argues with Josette's portrait, which represents Kitty's previous life. Barnabas eventually finds Kitty there, asks for her hand in marriage, and she quickly accepts. Barnabas needs to make some necessary arrangements, unquote. The doof. Which somehow leaves Kitty in a state of anxiety, and for whatever reason, she morphs into her own portrait and is propelled back to her life as Josette Dupré in the 1790s and no longer really remembers her life as Kitty Soames. So the retroactive continuity basically ends with Josette thinking that Barnabas forgot her and takes poison, which I'm like going, oh man. You know, either way, with the fall off of Widow's Hill, that could definitely be seen as an accident rather than a suicide. But with the poison, that's like heavier if you're a Catholic. So, wow. So going back to the steps in Josette Dupré. So we have Josette 1790s, Kitty Soames 1890s, and then this retroactive continuity. We're trying to go as chronological as possible. Okay, so basically put, a time-traveling Barnabas follows Kitty back to the 1790s. He knows the history, so he manages to get Countess Dupré to save Josette at Widow's Hill, and it works. This created a retroactive continuity change in events for the Dark Shadows timeline. At some point, the Leviathans kidnap Barnabas, and Josette, once Kitty, poisons herself in the belief that he just forgot about her. Not the best writing in the world, but whatever. I guess these things happen when you introduce H.P. Lovecraft books into the mix. Keeping to how Dark Shadows would be in linear form, we go back to the beginning of the show. So, Josette's chronology in 1790s, 1890s, with a hop backwards again, and then 1960s, when Dark Shadows begins, and we have Josette Collins as the ghost of Josette. We also have Maggie Evans performed by Catherine Lee Scott, who often performs as Josette's ghost. She also performed Kitty and Josette. Josette's ghost is more a friend to David Collins, but eventually Victoria Winters picks up on Josette's ghost, and Josette is pivotal in helping to figure out Laura's mischievous activities and warning who will listen. Laura even recognizes Josette's ghost and tells her that David is hers. Trippy episode. After Laura's story ends, Jason McGuire, Willie Loomis, and then Barnabas Collins shows up. Jason finally gets eliminated, and we hear about Barnabas Collins' tale of being in love with Josette and losing her. Of course, this leads to the kidnapping of Maggie Evans, which drags on forever, but after she receives help from the ghost of Sarah Collins and Willie Loomis gets sent to Wincliffe, we start to see Maggie Evans having flashbacks of being Josette. It's a bit more vague than Kitty, but it's in there every so often. Now, this would mean that Josette's ghost, earlier, is an astral projection from Maggie Evans, because with that continuity, her having flashbacks, she's the reincarnation of Josette Dupré. So, how could Josette's ghost be in that first year? Because it is a astral projection from Maggie Evans. And there's little bits and pieces that you can find throughout the first year, where if they're going with that in the second year and onward through, the writers decided, oh, well, yeah, it's an astral projection thing. So that's why the ghost could be there. And then Maggie as the reincarnation could also work. It's kind of crazy, but yeah, it's something that we all figured out over time. Just like, hey, well, how about this? And that also goes back to the 2012 film. If you think about Magtoria and the ghost just hovering around her, it's like a projection of her previous life to her. So within that, Josette's ghost in the first year is an astral projection of Maggie Evans, who is a reincarnation of Josette Dupré. So there we have it. And then I was asking around and Melissa was helping me because I was saying that with Maggie Evans, it's more difficult because there are just like all these little bits and pieces and they're in there and they're in there strongly. But then we move on to another storyline and another storyline and another storyline. And these little bits just keep popping up. So it's a pain in the neck. So Melissa was helping me with the details of where Maggie Evans comes in. Now, I remembered the earrings that Joe Haskell took umbrage with and had them appraised and all that. So we get to other things that Melissa let me know about. And she says, I'm sure you recall the episode where Maggie meets Cassandra for the first time. Later, while having tea with Victoria in the drawing room, Maggie gets lost in thought, trying to remember where she has seen Cassandra before. Clearly, a Josette moment. Yeah, that was something. Because in episode 697, Barnabas finds Maggie in a Quentin-haunted Collinwood wearing a Victorian dress. The dress has the colors of Josette's room in the old house, which I think we actually discussed together. Like, I think I had found it, she had found it, and we combined our knowledge, but she's reminding me now, blue and white. It seems that early point in the 97 storyline.
Yeah, that was the trippy thing about Maggie just switching into this dress that had a Victorian look, but the colors of Josette's bedroom, which is very much blue and white, with like the green drapes too. So there is that. So yeah, there's
all these things that are, they're like sporadic and they're in there for Maggie. And Maggie's character stretches out the most in Dark Shadows. So it's like looking for not a needle in the haystack, but multiple needles in a haystack. We noticed that. But yeah, the main thing is just, I was like, I'm concerned. I mean, I don't understand why there wasn't some kind of resolution. It seemed like the geeks of Dark Shadows were very much like fans of Star Trek 2, so they would geek it up and get a lot of these details accurate. And you know, maybe that did happen. But, you know, you have all this brouhaha, you have all this hype, and it was going on prior to commercial social media, too. They just kind of upped the volume, like, 50 times. So you would get, like, this weird stuff where people aren't watching the source material and they're just sort of going around. That's why I was like, I want actual fans. I want the source material. Yeah, you can type in a search engine and hope you get something accurate, but it's not always going to be. And we all knew that 15 years ago. I don't understand why we don't understand that now, other than the stuff that I've learned through Humane Tech. Yeah, I was just going with who loved who, and I wasn't going to argue with who loved who. I mean, I'm like, why do that? I haven't done that for anything else. So, yeah, I was just confused. And I'm sure a lot of the people listening to this were totally confused. Like, why is all this stuff happening? And like I said, if you go to the sources that I've told you about, as far as the computer electronics and the people behind that stuff, then hopefully by this time you've learned everything you need to learn. And escapism is going to be pretty important. So, yeah. Josette, she's complicated. But if you think about other shows and movies, especially science fiction ones, and Spock, shouldn't be that complicated. And I don't mind saying that, because Dark Shadows was on the Sci-Fi Channel. It made it there for a reason. So for the 10th anniversary in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, sharing it online, hoping for the best, and getting very little and being very confused, and this very long journey of finding out what the heck the problem was, that is so complicated that I can't expect everybody else to understand it in one fell swoop. I cannot, you know, I've done my best. I try to explain it to my nearest and dearest, a lot of which are gone, and some of the listeners out there, their nearest and dearest, a lot of them, are also gone. I want to say we're all in this together, but maybe we're not all together in mind and body either, much less in spirit. So, I'm going to put this out there. Happy 10th anniversary in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, 10-year anniversary, before the 2012 film was released, and then as soon as it was, I had that much more assurance that people who really cared about what the story entailed would also enjoy what I was putting together long before the film was released. So hopefully the sites I've told you about and the other things I've told you about, you know, I wanted to go on about good stuff from Lisa, good stuff from Melissa I already have, but other stuff. I wanted to praise Lynn Daniels, didn't get a chance to do that. Get in touch if you can. And of course, Oisin Devoy. And various pen pals. I'm just trying to wrap this up here because I don't want it to be too long. If you want a long one, you have the July 2017. That's very long if you just want to listen to my voice to get you to sleep. So yeah, happy birthday, 10 years in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. Also wanted to talk about the Dark Shadows 2 Rebuild and Columbine, but I don't think we have time. So I'm going to wrap it up. Hope you're all doing good and taking care of yourselves and eating well. And enjoying dreamwit.org or all the rest in the list. Happy birthday, Pit. Y'all take care. XOISCYTHE@hotmail.com. That is my email address. xoisceythe at hotmail.com. Take care.
The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows is a Daryl War production.